Hi, everybody. Today's Monday, June 23rd, 2025, and our friend Larry Johnson's back with us. Welcome back, Larry.
Man, I got to go get my sunglasses. That shirt you're rocking. You're looking good, dude.
Thank you,
Larry. Styling.
Larry, let's start with the American attack on Iran. And Donald Trump came out and said they destroyed everything. The attack was successful on all of that. Here is what the White House is talking about just today. They mentioned it.
Was completely and totally obliterated because there have been different assessments on exactly how much damage has been done.
We are confident, yes, that Iran's nuclear sites were completely and totally obliterated, as the president said in his address to the nation on Saturday night. And we have a high degree of confidence that where those strikes took place is where Iran's enriched uranium was stored. The president wouldn't have launched the strikes if we weren't confident in that. So this operation was a resounding success, and administration officials agree with that, as well as.
Your take on what has happened, Larry?
Well, I give Carolyn Leavitt credit. She's much better looking than Baghdad Bob. You know, I remember the spokesman for Saddam Hussein. There are no tanks in Baghdad. And you see the tanks rolling in the back. Oh, here she is. We obliterated it. I mean, there's nothing left. Just a bunch of sand and dust. But, you know, the overhead photographs clearly show that, particularly with respect to Fordo, they didn't penetrate. You know, they didn't destroy it. And Iran apparently had, you know, had advance warning. Now it's unclear how this advance warning came about. Did the United States tip them off? That wouldn't be the first time that kind of thing has happened. We saw it in Syria in 2017 and 2018. Well, I think 2017 was the attack on Sharat airfield. And I know from people that were involved with the operation at the time that we called up the Russians and said, hey, we're going to be attacking this this airfield, and it's going to be this time, and we're going to be using this many weapons. So you might not want to make sure your people are there. You might want to get them out and tell the Syrians. And so they vacated the area. We bombed. Trump, oh, big victory. Look what I did. Oh, you know, all this nonsense. And that's what we're getting more here. Oh, we obliterated the Iranian program. It's also possible that Russia gave them the heads up, or China, you know, both countries are and said, look, Clear your people out. Get out your enriched uranium. But Iran allowed those planes to hit without any effort at trying to shoot them down. Even if, you know, maybe they couldn't, but even they didn't even make an attempt. So that suggests strongly to me this was sort of some staged theatrics. But the insistence of Trump that, oh, yeah, we wiped it out. He's a liar. There's no, you know, he's a liar. And it's not the first time he's lied and embellished and exaggerated. And, you know, everything's the best. He doesn't have the capability to actually do a nuanced assessment of anything. It's either the best or the worst. It's almost schizophrenic.
I don't know if you saw my podcast with Mirandi the day before the attack. He said he literally mentioned in the talk that we did that Iran has emptied all these sites and nothing is there to be hit.
Yeah.
And I don't know if what has happened with Donald Trump, he's trying to, what is he trying to achieve? I cannot understand it, because if the main concern is the Iranian nuclear program and the enrichment or that amount of 400 kilogram of uranium, enriched uranium, they didn't do anything. They didn't achieve anything. It seems that they targeted the same target that Israelis tried before, and nothing came that much. There are reports showing that even you look at the Iranian media, there have been some sort of damages being, but nothing that much important.
Yeah, no, this is all about regime change. That's all. And we saw it today with that ridiculous, pathetic figure, Reza Pahlavi Jr., coming out and claiming, you know, people of Iran, rise up and follow me. Let me come back in and bring Savak. You know, I'll put you back in prison and torture you. You know, I don't think that message is going to resonate. The attack of Israel, you know, this was, and it wasn't just Israel, because the United States was involved with, you know, what took place on Friday the 13th. While nobody in the CIA has called me up and said, hey, here's what we did, just looking at it, I can tell that the CIA and Mossad were intimately involved in putting together this major, you know, they saw this as a way to, you know, assassinate all these people, decapitate leadership, and hope and counting that the people would rise up. And they miscalculated. It didn't go as expected. It's had just the opposite effect. It solidified support for the government. Now, let's be clear. The Iranian government is just, you know, it's been pathetic on a whole host of things. One, it refused to enter into a security pact with Russia, which it, had they done so, it actually probably would have deterred what has taken place. But they didn't. They refused to accept Russian air defense, except at Bushehr, the Bushehr power plant. Again, they, well, you know, we stopped them in October, and we can do it again. And they've been a failure. Well, not total, but Israel is able to hit just about any spot at once in Iran right now with missiles, albeit they have limited, you know, limited explosive capability, but they're hitting. No denying that. So Iran could have had S-400 systems deployed at critical strategic sites. They haven't done that. But, you know, with all the failures of Iran, they're still intact. Israel doesn't have the military force nor the strategic depth to dismantle it. But they were sort of hoping this would be like what happened in Syria, where a sudden collapse without understanding the difference in the two societies. You know, it's been a miscalculation on the part of the West. And now they've got a problem, because Iran is not showing any signs of letting up on its retaliatory strikes against Israel. They just had, you know, I went to bed late, but, you know, as of roughly 10 a.m. On Monday in Israel, there hadn't been any missile strikes. And then between 10 and noon, Iran hit them, you know, with at least 15 to 20 north to south. So Israel as well is, you know, it doesn't have an air defense. That's the one thing right now Iran and Israel share in common. They got crappy air defense. It doesn't work, and each side can hit the other at will.
It doesn't seem to me that Iran would attack the United States. They're somehow focused on Israel because they see Israel as the final reason, as the main reason that what's going to be, considering what's going on between Iran and the West. Do you think that they're going to continue the same way? They're going to just attack Israel, or they're going to somehow, they're thinking of just blocking the Strait of Hormuz? And we know that Yemenis, Houthis, have announced that no U.S. ship can pass the Bab el-Mandab or the Red Sea.
Yeah.
They're prepared to attack. What's going on in terms of the escalation or the management of escalations in the eyes of Iranian, as we, how do you see their behavior to be?
Well, it looks like Iran is thinking about, okay, what are we going to do? Look, it's, you don't want to be like a bunch of 5-year-old kids. He hit me last. And you're just slapping each other back and forth to accomplish what? Military force is not, it should not be used just to say, yeah, I was able to kill some people. But you killed civilians who had nothing to do with the attack on you. How does that stop any future attacks? So I'm hopeful that Iran is sitting back and thinking, okay, what is it that we want to do right now? What's our objective? If they launch attacks on U.S. military facilities that have already been largely, as the Iran nuclear sites were, evacuated. So you don't, you know, you're not going to kill too many people. You're not necessarily going to render those sites inoperable, but you are going to give the United States, see, they hit us. Now we can retaliate. And so then it adds to Iran's, level of destruction, number one, that it's going to experience. And I'm making an assumption here that as a result of the meeting today with Putin in Moscow, with Foreign Minister Arafji, Iran's now going to take the S-400s and accept Russian help and Chinese help in a way that they haven't previously. I think they're going to recognize they need some assistance. So, the way to that's in place. I don't see them launching some big spectacular strike to deliberately target the United States. In part, they actually be more devastating to Trump that Iran basically says to the United States, you're not even worth spitting at. You did nothing to us. So we're going to ignore you for now, but we're going to finish off. They're going to continue to put the pressure on Israel. Yeah. Keep the focus there. I don't think that they're going to shut down the Strait of Hormuz for the simple reason 80% of the oil that comes out of there, where does it go? Do you know where it goes?
Yeah, to China.
Well, India and China account for about 20%, but then the other 60% go to other countries in Asia.
Yeah, yeah.
So right now, Iran has the goodwill of so many countries who are condemning the United States and Israel. I mean, with each of these actions, the United States and Israel are revealed to be these despicable bullies. I don't see it in Iran's benefit to shut down the Straits of Hormuz to cut off oil to India and China. What did they do? So, I think they're going to be, now they may be, will selectively target certain ships that are, going to Europe, for example. They may try to do that. impose sort of a specific embargo that, hey, any ship heading to Asia, good on you, God bless, go fast. But anyway, a ship that's destined for Europe, stop, you're not leaving. They might do that. So it's going to be, I think Iran now is going to, well, as we've seen, they're not reacting immediately and emotionally to the attacks on the 22nd, Sunday morning. But they are continuing to hit Israel. And so, Israel, again, has launched some missiles in the past within the last 3 hours. And I'm sure we'll see another Iranian response. They just keep hitting back and they are inflicting significant painful damage on Israel.
And you mentioned we know that the Iranian foreign minister is in Russia talking with Putin. Here is what Peskov said, that Russian assistance to Iran will depend entirely on Tehran's specific requests.
Yeah.
And how do you see the way that these two countries are communicating, or maybe bring in China? And do you feel, because we had previously, we had Medvedev tweeting that he mentioned that the Iranian nuclear facilities were not damaged that much and no problem with that. And the other thing that he mentioned in that tweet was a number of countries are prepared to give Iran nuclear bombs.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody before talked about it. Medvedev mentioned it. Your take on what's going on in terms of the relationship, the negotiation or the talks or communications between the two countries?
Well, way before you were born, back in the 60s, there was a commercial on television for Excedrin. And this mother-in-law, I guess it was mother, was hectoring her adult daughter about, you got to do this and you got to do that. And at one point, you know, the daughter with this raging headache goes, mother, please, I'd rather do it myself. That's been Iran, okay? You know, Russia's offered help. China's offered help. Iran, please, we'd rather do it ourselves. And I understand the desire to be independent and stand on your own two feet. But there comes a time when you got to step up and recognize we're facing here a threat that we may not be able to handle on our own. Now, after the attacks on, was it October 27th of last year, Iran's air defense appeared to have functioned pretty well. You know, they kept the F-35s offshore outside of Iranian airspace and shot down most of the missiles that came in. And, you know, no damage of any consequence was done. Well, that's not been the case since June 13th. Now, despite claims that the Iranian planes or Israeli planes are overflying Iran at will, that we haven't seen really any video evidence to substantiate that, but they are able to get up to the territorial limits of Iran and fire missiles that are hitting targets throughout, up and down, north to south. Iran's got to do something to stop that. Okay? And the best way to stop it is with the help of Russia and with China. Now, the Chinese, you know, they put the two intelligence collection vessels into the Persian Gulf, which is, I would argue, is another reason why I doubt that Iran's going to start mining the Straits of Hormuz to bottle up everybody that's in there, because, you know, the Chinese want to be free to leave when they want to. And Iran certainly doesn't want to run the risk of damaging the Chinese vessels. So Iran's in a position now where it needs to ask for help. And it doesn't need help in launching missiles. It doesn't need help in, you know, it's doing a good job of targeting. But it does need help in really eliminating the threat of Israeli missiles that continue to hit targets in Iran.
Yeah. Larry, here is what Matt Gaetz said about the way that the Trump administration is dealing with Iran.
Kick their regime change habit with Iraq or Libya or Syria, it seems. They need another fix. But Matt, this isn't a regime change war. It's about Iran's nuclear program. I wish that were true, but it's not. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene opined that maybe Netanyahu is so feisty about regime change in Iran because he was facing regime change in Israel.
It's not being reported enough that on Thursday, they held a vote in the Knesset, and it was only by two votes that Netanyahu won. If he had lost, they would have had another election in Israel, and the polling shows that he would lose if an election were to occur today.
Yeah, you see how the situation in Israel is somehow putting pressure on Donald Trump maybe to do something in Iran in order to change the what's going on in Israel to the position of Netanyahu.
Well, Before we go to that, let's just talk about Matt Gaetz for a moment. We now know that Susie Wiles, I believe, is Jewish and an ardent Zionist. And she's been a major force in keeping people like with Matt Gaetz's views out of government. Okay? But, you know, when you go back and look at the Trump decision to appoint or nominate Gaetz to be attorney general, I think that was deliberate because it got him out of Congress because he had been a thorn in the side of the Zionists in Congress. You know, he would have been there with arm in arm with Matt Gaetz, with Thomas Massie right now if he'd stayed in Congress. I think they deliberately, they knew he would not win. They knew he would not be able to secure the nomination, but that's why they got him out. Wow. And now he's on television free to speak his mind, but he's not in a political position as he was. So I just, you know, just putting that as background. So this is the timing of this may have been linked to you know, Netanyahu's political dilemma and the effort to stave off pressures to throw him out. So, you know, we got lots of moving circles and wheels here. This is, you know, first and foremost to produce regime change in Iran, but it also heightens, you know, Netanyahu, as long as he can keep Israel in a state of war, perpetual war, you know, he can stay in power. And so, you know, this is not a simple matter of, you know, oh, we've got to stop Iran from enriching uranium. Because, you know, I would argue this has actually had the exact opposite effect. It has strengthened the position of the hardliners in Iran that we need to build a bomb. If we had a bomb, they wouldn't be doing this to us. And, you know, some have said, oh, it's going to take Iran a while to figure out how to configure a ballistic missile to carry it. I said, I don't know who said that, but I don't think that's the case. I think Iran's got a lot of expertise in building warheads and being able to put a nuclear warhead on top of one of those platforms that they already have in place should not be too difficult. The North Koreans have done it. And I would guess that there is collaboration or communication going on between North Korea and Iran. So now Russia doesn't want to see the proliferation take place, but yeah, you know, let's step back and look at this from Iran's perspective. They did today announce, took action in their legislature to withdraw from the IAEA. Iran's participation in the International Atomic Energy Association was a platform used by CIA and MI6 to spy on Iran's nuclear program. And I would bet that the Stuxnet virus that got introduced way back when got introduced via IAEA channels. I'd bet a lot of money on that. So now Iran's going to join the status of Israel, who has never allowed IAEA inspectors. And they're going to, Iran's going to withdraw from the non-proliferation treaty. Because from its standpoint, it says, look, we did IAEA, we signed the NPT, and what has it bought us? You, the West, making up lies about us, creating, you know, that report that was issued 2 weeks ago by IAEA claiming all these violations by Iran that had taken place 20 years ago. It was completely staged in order to help shape this public narrative to justify the attacks on Iran. And it's all Iran's just got to say, we're no longer participating in that system. And that will be one further item for future negotiation if they actually, if they actually go that route. Excuse me for a second. I just need to come here. There you go. Getting a call that I had to tell the person I have to call you later. Sorry. Yeah. But you know, so if the effort of the West was genuinely to, well, we want to stop Iran from enriching uranium, good luck with that, guys. You've just created the alternative. So this is, you know, and you and I talked about this before, and I've written about it. I call this Saddam Hussein II. You know, just as in 2002, there was this drumbeat of propaganda about Saddam Hussein and weapons of mass destruction. And that was used to justify an unnecessary war. That war was not about weapons of mass destruction. It was about taking control of Iraq and getting oil for Israel. Real simple. And this again, is this is on the Israel first agenda. And, you know, unfortunately, I think for the West, they're going to fail. And fortunately for the people of Iran and others, Pakistan and Afghanistan, and unfortunately, you know, Syria is still has been decimated by Western interference. That maybe, just maybe, they can break free of this Western hegemon.
I think if Iran's smart, they need to think of Gaddafi in Libya, what has happened to him. And look at what, Larry, you've mentioned IAEA and NPT. Literally all of these sanctions, look at the history of sanctions on Iran. They're mostly based on the reports from IAEA, because Iran is doing this, doing that, and let's impose sanctions on Iran. I don't know any sort of benefit coming out of these communications, these channels that between Iran, the international community, international organization. They're, right as we talk, there are a lot of people discussing what's going on with the IAEA and NPT. They don't want to be. What is the benefit for Iran? They're asking this question right now in Iran.
Yeah, you know, Iran's behaved a lot like a teenage boy that wants to date what they think is the prettiest girl in school. And they keep thinking, oh, well, I have to dress a certain way. I have to talk a certain way. I have to eat certain, you know, they have to change who they are, they think, in order for that pretty girl to pay attention to them. And then once they make all those changes, they find out the girl, you know, laughs at them, calls them names, and say, get lost. I'm not going to date you. You know, I think Iran has been trying to really sort of ingratiate itself with the West. You know, please like us. Please let us, you know, we're not really bad people. We keep hearing, oh, Iran's bad because they chant death to America. Well, what the hell do you think Americans are saying about Iran? Long live Iran? It's death to Iran without the chanting it on television. Okay, it's not a cultural thing, but you know, the message about death to Iran is the policy of the United States. So, you know, we got to stop with, you know, oh yeah, Al, and Iran's chanting death to America, death to Israel for no good reason. I mean, United States and Israel just been minding their own business over all these years, doing nothing bad, just, you know, picking flowers and drinking wine and just chilling out. And here these nasty Iranians keep attacking us for no good reason. It's just a total ignorance of history. And without recognizing that, hey, Do you think the fact that the United States, with our the son of Theodore Roosevelt, Kermit Roosevelt, that overthrew the elected government of Iran, Mossadegh, in 53, and installed a toady, a Western toady, and that toady ended up torturing and killing, you know, tens of thousands of Iranians over the years. Think that had anything to do with some of the animus directed at the West? You know, how about Western involvement in supplying Iraq with chemical weapons that were used to attack Iran? Do you think that has anything to do with the animus? How about U.S. shelling Shia communities in the Baqa Valley with battleships in 83, killing women, children, and men, Shia? Do you think that? So there's a context to all of this. And that's what people don't want to look at or acknowledge. And when Iran has struck back, as America would, let's put it this way. If America was in the position of what Iran has been, we would have been fighting, bombing, killing. And look at all the fighting, bombing, and killing we do for much, much less provocation. So it is, we live in this world where the United States, by virtue of its economic power, can dictate a narrative. And most people are not willing to even think about how nonsensical that narrative is. They just buy into it, and then, you know, actions on, and they support these kinds of actions, like as we saw Sunday morning.
Gary, it was somehow tragic to see Tulsi Gabbard sitting in the Situation Room while the attack was happening.
She's lost her soul. Sorry, she's lost her soul, in my view. Go ahead.
She was, look at the track records of Tulsi Gabbard, the way that she was talking about the wars in the Middle East, how she was opposing, going against the people who were advocating for war, and right now sitting in the Situation Room and watching what's going on between the United States attack on Iran. Let me put it this way. What is the main benefit for the Trump administration that could convince even someone like Tulsi Gabbard to be part of this?
Well, the money that's been pumped in by Israel and by Zionist Americans who are ardent supporters of Zionism. And, you know, we were talking to wealthy billionaires, people like Bill Ackman of Pershing Square. Sheldon Adelson's widow, I think it's Miriam, has pumped in reportedly, you know, $50 million, $100 million, who knows how much money. You know, that's part of it. But, you know, it'd be one thing if Tulsi was standing up and speaking courageously. But she's not doing that. She's folded. And part of the reason she's folded, she is inexperienced in this whole intelligence world. So, you know, Israel's been pumping intelligence from Mossad sources. And you may find this difficult to believe, but even within CIA, there's a tendency among some operations officers to think, oh man, those Israelis are really good. Why? How are they so good? Well, they tell us they're good. So they keep telling, man, we are the best. We have the best intelligence. You know, they do it with the accent, and yeah, it's just, they're insufferable from my contact with them. And the Americans buy into that. And so now Israel's pumping in all this intelligence. Yes, you don't have the sources we do. And they get to say, see, look at all these assassinations we've carried out in Iran. See, we got these great sources. And nobody's willing to do the critical thinking. The fact that you've got an Iranian society that is not an oppressive authoritarian system, and you can use minority, you know, ethnic minorities like Kurds, Azeris, Baluchis, who you know, in some cases have legitimate grievances against the ruling Persians. You get them to carry out attacks. That doesn't necessarily mean you've got actual penetration, understanding, and insight about what is actually taking place within the nuclear enrichment system. But so they come back and say, we got this intelligence. And Tulsi's too weak to say, well, you know, our intelligence, which part of it is based upon analytical conclusions where they look at such as, well, Iran is participating in the NPT, and Iran is participating in IAEA, and Iran is allowing inspectors into these sites. And up to this point, we've not had a situation where Iran says, no, you can't go behind that door. This is, sorry, top secret. You stay out. And so that's part of what's gone into this judgment. And the fact that you've had consensus between, you know, as I talked about on Friday, the five different, you know, main collector agencies within the intelligence community, CIA on the human side, DIA on the human intelligence side, State Department reporting through, you know, what's taking place, diplomatic traffic and from embassies overseas, the National Security Agency, all electronic communication, NGA, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, which overhead imagery and such. I have been in, you know, with far, far less important issues, but in put in a coordination process. And it's not a simple matter getting other agencies to agree with you. I mean, they, you know, they've got people that, you know, type A personalities and strongly held beliefs. So the fact that the U.S. intelligence community has reached that conclusion and not willing, you know, they've recognized that Israel's selling, you know, they're selling a product that they want that serves their interests. And there's always you accept these Israeli reports with a real grain of salt, and it's a polite way of saying you don't discount them completely because they're usually lying, or they're telling you what you want to hear, what they want you to hear, so you'll do what they want. And because there are a number of other indicators you would expect to see take place if Iran was in fact enriching to develop a bomb. And then we got, you know, you got Bibi Netanyahu's repeated, you know, crying nuke for the last, you know, 40 years. Oh, they're going to have it next week. They're going to have it next month. And it never comes to pass. So when you put all that together, Tulsi should have stood behind this. She folded like a cheap tent in a hurricane. You know, it's really sad to see. And so she just wants to hang on to the job, it looks like. So, you know, she likes being called, I'm the director of national intelligence. Hey, it's setting her up financially. She plays along and she plays the game and doesn't rock the boat. You know, she'll make out financially. And unfortunately, I think that's what's going on.
Also, the journal reported that the United States has asked Arab nations to send a message to Iran that Israel wants the war to end soon. How do you feel that Iran would let this war end, or they would be interested in continuing the war and damaging more Israel? Because I don't see... Do you feel that the United States would again attack Iran? If yes. The war continues?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's why I'm hoping that Araghchi got a deal, you know, asked Putin, Mr. President, we're sorry for being, ingrates in the past and turning down your offers of help. We would really like to have your help now come bolster our air defense system. So the next time the United States tries to attack us, we can blow them out of the air. and we can shut down these Israeli missiles that are attacking us. I personally think, I hope that Iran continues to decimate, shut down Ben Gurion airport so that they can't fly out, shut down the ports at Haifa, as well as there's another one, I forget the name of it, that's on the Mediterranean coast. And then Eliyat down in the south, shut Shiba, that down.
Shiba, huh? Something like that.
Yeah. Shiba. Amen. But shut them down. Destroy their electrical grid. And destroy Dimona. Destroy their nuclear sites. From a military standpoint, that you do that to Israel, Israel's going to be hard-pressed to continue fighting a war. And then, you know, Israel doesn't need to go to Arabs to say, oh, would you go talk to the Iranians for us? The Iranians say, hey, you got our phone number. You know, people forget that back in 1980 81, Iran and Israel were actually dealing with each other quite a bit. It went all the way up through the Iran-Contra scandal in 1985, 86. So, you know, Iran and Israel, they got contacts. They got people that have, you know, dealt with each other before. And so, this is a sign, I would argue, that Iran strikes are being effective. They need to keep the Israelis, in my view, in a continued state of terror. The Israeli public needs to experience just a portion of what they've inflicted on the Palestinians. And the more Israel is preoccupied with trying to fend off Iranian missiles, you know, and I looked up, you know, because Israel uses Arrow 2, Arrow 3 missiles. And I wondered, gee, how many are they producing? Initially, I thought those were produced in the United States. I was mistaken. They're produced. U.S. produces a lot of the components, but it's assembled in Israel. And they reportedly make about 50 a year. And each missile costs, you know, about $3 million. Well, when they fire at an incoming Iranian ballistic missile, they're firing sometimes two, sometimes 10. So, you know, just do the math over a course of a week. They could fire 300-400 Arrow missiles. Ooh, you're running down your stockpile. And they can't make, it's not like they can start cranking them out. You know, say, hey, let's, we want to make 200 a week. Can't do it. And the other part is I was told, I haven't confirmed it, but that some of the Iranian ballistic missiles are made for as cheaply as $250,000 up to $500,000. So, you know, Iran spends $500,000 sending a missile, and then here's Israel spending $12 million to shoot that missile down, or try to, and in many cases failing to do so. So, you know, these economics are going to build up and create more pressure on Israel than they will on Iran. So I think, you know, Iran, I think Iran understands that and is able to, you know, continue the war in that regard and not get distracted, not, you know, try, okay, yeah, let's go fight the United States too. Yeah, that may be what the U.S. actually wants. Yeah, go ahead, attack us so we can then rally our people so we can now get ourselves involved with another needless war. I'm not saying that the U.S. would necessarily defeat Iran, but it would divert some of Iran's resources and focus in a time when stay focused on Israel. To just destroy the Zionist madness, you know, make it so that reasonable people come back into power in Israel and that you can actually have a negotiated settlement that the interests of Iran and the interests of the Palestinian people will all be protected. There's a way. I think there's a way to do them, at least militarily.
I think the only way that they may change the mindset of these people who are supporting Netanyahu and his actions throughout the Middle East would be this sort of war of attrition. That may change their mind because they're not going to sit there and enjoy their life while they're destroying Gazans, while they're destroying everything in Palestine, in the West Bank. This war of attrition is something new to the Israeli society, Larry. We have to consider that they didn't see this before. And new conditions, yeah. They're leaving. Many of these people are leaving Israel to go to Cyprus. I don't know, some other places to just everything comes down and everything gets more calm in Israel. But if the war of attrition continues, that would bring the pain to the society.
Oh, yeah.
How is that going to influence the policymakers in Israel if the war continues, this sort of war of attrition?
No, it's going to build enormous political pressure to bring an end to it. The Israeli citizens are, have been spending basically most of the last 9 days in bomb shelters. You know, when they climb into bed at night, they're not getting to say, oh, boy, we're going to have a relaxed sleep. You're constantly, oh, my God, we hear a siren, and then we got to run to the bomb shelter. And they're seeing, Israel's never been hit like this. And that was a point I made even before it started, saying that, if Iran follows through on this, Israel's going to experience a level of, destruction, physical destruction and casualties that they've never, ever, ever experienced in any of the prior wars, even including this, Six-Day War and the Yom Kippur War. It's just, they're now taking it on the chin. And by virtue of this kind of suffering, it's gonna bring political pressure, and they'll at some point they'll toss Netanyahu. I think it will become so great that while they'll be tempted to use a nuke, I think there's still enough. There's at least one or two sane people still in Israel that would prevent that, but Russia and the Chinese and even the United States would probably recognize you can't do that. If they do that, it would push this in a very, very dangerous direction that we get outside of the control of those folks trying to keep it under control.
Today, Israel attacked one of the main universities in Tehran, Sheikh Beheshti University, and they attacked other civilian infrastructures as well. And we had Morandi coming out on X. He said that if Israel continues with this sort of mindset attacking civilians, we may change our strategy in hitting the targets in Israel. How? Because this is not Hezbollah or Hamas. They can hit Israel at any point in Israel. But do you feel that Iran would change its strategy if Israel would continue with the same sort of attacking civilians?
Well, I mean, look, Israel attacking civilians, we've got 23 months of evidence of, in Gaza and in West Bank and in Damascus and in Beirut. So, that's what these despicable Zionists do. I think Iran, I understand the emotion. I mean, when you get hit like that, you want to react emotionally and in anger, you punch, I'm going to punch you. I think Iran's approach is it's much better to focus on destroy the economic infrastructure of Israel. Destroy the military and intelligence headquarters of the Israeli occupation force. Destroy the power plants, destroy the airports, destroy the port infrastructure, make it impossible for Israel to survive economically. You don't have to kill civilians. I think Iran, in doing that, will send a very clear message about, let's see who's the civilized culture and society. Don't fall for this, you know, demonic god that the Zionists worship, you know, eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. If you embrace a deity, go for a deity that says, you know, basically, if you've been wronged, that doesn't justify you committing the same crime. So avoid, you remember last week when Iran hit a military headquarters that was near a hospital, the blast wave broke glass, knocked some structures down in the hospital, but it wasn't an attack on the hospital. Oh my God. Well, the Zionists were out with crocodile tears. Oh, look at this. They're targeting civilians and hospitals. Meanwhile, these are the same people that have attacked, I think the number is 36 hospitals in Gaza, yeah, and have killed babies and women. Please spare me the hypocrisy. But I think that's just a reminder that it doesn't serve Iran's interests to attack hospitals, to attack churches, synagogues. Go after the research centers. Go after the infrastructure. Just keep blowing that up. And there's going to come a point where Israel will not be able to, you know, continue to exist as they have. So that would be my recommendation, but nobody's calling me up and asking me.
I think that's so logic. And from what I'm hearing from Iran, their main goal is the same as you mentioned. They want to hit Israel strategically in the way that works for them in a long run, not in a short term, and making these huge backfires from the international community. Yeah, they don't need to do that. They don't need to go. Why these civilians? They didn't. You don't have any reason to hit civilians. I don't see that.
Well, I think that was the other point that Professor Morandi was making with you yesterday when you had an excellent chat with Sayed and with Pepe, our buddy, that the level of international support, the outpouring of support that's coming to Iran now is unprecedented. You know, you go back 10 years ago when JCPOA was being negotiated, and Iran was really isolated significantly on a diplomatic front, economic front, military front, etc. That's not the case now. And I think Iran has got a real opportunity where it can really fight this war. Normally, it's very difficult to win a war with just an air campaign or just with missiles. But I think actually Israel, by virtue of its small size, that Iran can take out, you know, make sure that nobody's flying out of the country because the airport's shut down. The food and critical supplies are not really coming in the volume because the ports are shut down. All of a sudden, you know, how does a country like Israel survive? Because it's not like they're sitting on, you know, loads of natural resources. Then, you know, disrupt the power, you know, take the power out and destroy their nuclear enrichment sites, which are, Iran can certainly prevent them from operating as normal. That's how Iran wins this. And it doesn't, you don't have to kill civilians. That's one of the other, if you look at the number of missiles and ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, drones attacks that Iran has launched, they've actually killed very, very few Israelis. And I think that is a deliberate strategy on the part of Iran, and I applaud them for it.
Larry, before wrapping up this session, how do you see these sort of reactions from those people who voted for Donald Trump in the United States? Because in the Situation Room, if you look at what's going on, he was Make America Great Again. And he started a new conflict in the Middle East. He attacked Iran, something that hasn't happened before. And how is that going to resonate, this sort of America first and attacking Iran? How is that going to resonate with the people, the base?
I would estimate probably, you know, among the MAGA base, 10, maybe 15% of that base right now is outraged and is turned against Trump. I think the majority of that base actually still supports him, but within that, you know, let's say within that remaining 90%, there's probably a good 40%, say, taking a wait and see approach. You know, they've heard, oh, we totally obliterated it. And then, you know, the evidence is going to continue to emerge over the course of the next 3 to 4 weeks that that's not the case. And then they're going to, once again, Trump's going to be coming back. So, now this time we're really going to destroy him. Trust me. Well, you know, your credibility is eroded then, because it would have been proved that what you told us the first time was male bovine excrement. So we're not actually giving you the benefit of the doubt this time. And all of that's taking place against the backdrop that Trump needs support in Congress, and he's beating up on people like Thomas Massie. I mean, just, you know, viciously. Yeah. And that's what I really despise about Donald Trump is, you know, he is such a narcissist. And granted, Barack Obama was a narcissist. Joe Biden's a narcissist. George W. But they're all, and Bill Clinton, they're all narcissists. Okay, they're not genuinely interested in what can we do to make America actually better. But Trump personalizes it in a way that just reflects the thinking of like a child, not an adult. And I think, you know, he started a process that will continue to erode his support, because I'm going to bring peace. Well, he's not bringing peace, and he's certainly not closing all these great economic deals that he pledged. Oh, yeah, the tariff. Remember, they're lining up to kiss my ass, he said. I don't see a long line.
Actually, we had in the news that Japan is considering not to participate in the NATO. And in South Korea as well, they've mentioned that they're not going to be there because of the United States attack on Iran. They're somehow, we don't know still about Japan. They're reconsidering their decision to go to NATO. But Larry, what's so much stupid about the decision before wrapping up is that somehow they feel if they destroy a facility, Iranians would be in a great problem. They don't, this is something domestic. They build it domestically. They know how to rebuild it. They know how to create it, maybe deeper. And nobody can reach that.
Well, you know, so speak of your own experience. So you were born when, 1980, 81?
84.
80, oh God. You're younger than my son, okay. So you were born, though, in the midst of the Iran-Iraq war, when Iraq was using chemical weapons.
Yeah.
So you have no memory of that war, do you?
Not much, but I remember the bombings.
What have your parents said to you?
Yeah, it was somehow about the attacks on Iran.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because in those days, the attacks were the Iraqi fighters would come to the cities bombing and getting back. And when they come, these sort of everybody rushing into the shelters and all of that, this sort of experience. I remember in my memory, I remember some of these just everything is just everybody's just going to the shelters. It's somehow, I remember some of that. It's not that much clear in my mind, in my imagination, but I remember those days, but it wasn't that much. Iran was not, if I'm not mistaken, those days Iran didn't have that much of power militarily, because it was in the aftermath of the Shah and the destruction that has happened in the initial days of revolution. We had some sort of messy situation in Iran, and they didn't know what to do, because it took time to find a better way to fight Saddam. But it was somehow, I remember those days, but not that much influential in my mind.
Yeah. Well, my point is, you know, Iran has been through the suffering and consequences of war before, and that was actually, the, you know, the loss of life that took place in that was far, far greater than what Iran is experiencing right now. And the Israel does not have the ability to sustain this level of operations against Iran. Again, particularly if the airports are shut down, the ports are closed, they're gonna run out of stuff. And you know, it really creates this is a time for patience on the part of Iran, where it remains calm. It has some humility to ask for assistance from Russia and China. Because, you know, Russia, China, Pakistan, there's a whole host of countries lined up willing to help. Because they're sick and tired of the United States bullying. And the United States thinking it can attack and kill whoever it wants with no consequences. The world has grown tired of it. And I think they see now as a time for Iran to help send a message that, United States, you need to stop. You need to stop.
Thank you so much, Larry, for being with us today. Great pleasure, as always.
I am irritated with you. I can't tell you how angry I am. You wore a better shirt than me. By God, what an insult. No, it looks great, man. You ought to consider that as part of a new look for you. Anyway, we'll see. We'll have, I'm sure, more to talk about come Friday.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you. Thank you for thinking that I'm worth talking to.
Thank you so much, Larry.
All right, my friend.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.